if people had started dying, and there were pictures in the world's press and on television of people dying of starvation, would you have changed your mind?
I would, it's certainly, yes. I think there would have been a strong grounds for that consideration. The policy as such, anyway, as it was enunciated, never said no humanitarian aid at any cost. What we said was that we did not feel it was justified to provide funding for humanitarian aid, A, because it was not needed at that time, but if the situation changed, and we said that in our statements at the time, we would then look at it. But we would also need to look at it in the context of whether it could be guaranteed that that humanitarian assistance would get to the people who needed it. And I come back to the point that I raised earlier. I don't think the NGOs could have guaranteed that. Bear in mind that all the expatriate staff were no longer in the country, so it was very difficult to sort of to monitor what was going on. And clearly, a lot of this humanitarian, particularly the food, would have been sort of hijacked by the soldiers and the rebels. I had a discussion with some NGOs about this, about what is the point you were making just now, Robin, what is the acceptable limit of how much you allow to be taken off? And already the NGOs at that time were saying they'd had to raise their level of acceptance from what used to be something like a 12% sort of fallout, and they were prepared to go up to 30%, 35%, 40%. The other aspect specifically I want to say about rice, because rice is the food that Sierra Leoneans like. But in the context that we were in at that time, rice became more than just a food substance. It became actually the currency. There were no banks. All the banks had closed down. And therefore, bags of rice was just like bags of dollars. So, in fact, to have bought bags of rice in was just like bringing sackloads of dollars in, which would also have helped, therefore, sort of keep the junta in power.
Margie, as it became clear that people were not dying, at least in large numbers, did you start changing your mind?
Well, we didn't, but I think the reason is that, as we know from so many different humanitarian crises, particularly on the African continent, but around the world, is it's notoriously difficult to establish exactly how many people are dying in any of these crises, unless you get very large refugee movements or population movements where you get large numbers of people living in one place. I mean, that's when it becomes, sadly, becomes newsworthy, and those are the pictures that get splashed across newspapers and TV screens.
But as I recall, people were not dying in large numbers.
We don't know. I really would say that we don't know. I would say that it wasn't a massive refugee crisis on the scale that we've seen
in
Goma.
If they had been dying in large numbers, the junta would have made political capital out of it, wouldn't they?
Again, I would
come
back to...
And they couldn't find anybody to put in pictures for the outside world to see.
Well, again, I come back to actually what's happening in humanitarian crises like the one we had in Sierra Leone in 97, where actually, where malnutrition rates are going up, that is something that's possible to monitor on a fairly regular basis, and that the information showed that malnutrition rates were going up. And it's within those situations that actually increased mortality is often a hidden trend, where people are not moving, and therefore it is not evidently happening on a large scale, then you don't have those shocking pictures that we associate with so many refugee situations. And as I say, there's now a number of studies from across different countries in Africa, including, interestingly enough, Sudan in the early 90s, where similarly there was a break on humanitarian aid, a withholding of humanitarian aid. And actually, studies have shown that as a result of malnutrition rates going up, there was an increased hidden mortality in rural areas and villages where people were living. They were not leaving their villages, but they were staying in their villages, and mortality was going up. So for those reasons, we took the increased malnutrition rates quite seriously, and we felt that humanitarian aid was being withheld for all the wrong reasons.
Peter?
All the decisions that were made about this were directed to the situation in Sierra Leone at that time. I mean, I'm not saying necessarily that we would make the same sort of decisions in a different conflict situation. But I think, you know, as I said, there was no evidence at all, and subsequently has there never been evidence that there was sort of mass starvation, mass numbers of people sort of dying as a result of this decision. I mean, if that had been the case, it would have come to light by now, the bodies would have been found and so on. So I think the decision we made at the time, based on the information we had at the time, has proved to be sort of more or less accurate. There was no mass starvation, no mass killings. And importantly, I come back to this point, the Sierra Leone people themselves were fully supportive of this decision. At that time, they were concerned to see the end of this junta. They felt that they were prepared to suffer and have lead a miserable life if it would just hasten the removal of this junta and bring back their democratically elected government, for which they'd also made great sacrifices bringing it into power in 1996.
Some people we spoke to in Sierra Leone said that a combination of dialogue with the junta and food aid as a weapon might have brought the junta to its heel.
Certainly the policy was a combination of sanctions and dialogue, which was to bring the junta to agree to sort of stand down and allow the restoration of the government. That was the official policy. Of course, the ECOWAS policy added on to that also use of force.
But there wasn't much talking going on between you and the junta, was there?
There was a lot of talk going on between the junta and ECOWAS. I mean, it was decided at the time, the United Nations and the international community decided to put their full support and weight behind the efforts of the ECOWAS Foreign Affairs Committee, the Committee of Five. So there was dialogue going on all the time between the junta and those foreign ministers and the ECOWAS governments, at which we were supporting and which I used to attend some of those meetings as well as an observer. So there was dialogue, but it wasn't direct dialogue because it wasn't considered appropriate. Effectively, we were looking still at that time of looking at an African problem with an African solution led by ECOWAS and the OAU.
They were desperate to be loved, this junta. They kept calling us at the BBC, for instance. They were desperate to be loved and understood.
Not least by their own people, because their own people didn't even love them either. So, yes, certainly they were desperate to be loved.
Mm. Was there anything lovable about them?
Only when they stood down, finally, no. I don't think there was anything lovable. As you know, before I went to Conakry, I'd spent a week negotiating with Johnny Porkeroma and those who committed the coup. And in fact, as a result of those weeks of discussions, Johnny Porkeroma had agreed to stand down. The sad fact was, of course, that he had also then opened the back door to the RUF rebels to come in. And when the RUF discovered that Johnny Porkeroma and the soldiers were about to stand down, the RUF stopped them from doing that. So there was an acceptance, I think, from the army in the early days that they could have stood down, but the RUF rebels put a stop to that and carried on their atrocities.
It was all over very quickly, in fact, wasn't it? They were only there for, what, 10 months, was it?
10 months is a very long time, I think, if you were living in Freetown or in Sierra Leone at that time. I mean, I found it, in fact, remarkable more the other way, that for 10 months, both the Sierra Leone people, by far the vast majority of them, and the international community remained united. And it was an important plank of the policy to ensure that that did remain united. I mean, not even people like Gaddafi or Castro even came out in support of the junta. I think there was a clear, therefore, message being sent to the junta that had to stand down. And part of the reasoning why the international community stayed so solidly together was that they were realising that the junta was totally incapable of governing the country, of providing any form of assistance to the people. That, therefore, is related, I think, to the whole question, therefore, of sort of assistance going in. The junta undoubtedly could have played it to their effect that if, say, for example, shiploads of sort of humanitarian assistance was coming in, they would have played it that this was thanks to their efforts and so on, and would have allowed them to create the impression that they were governing the country properly.